Hey, all you growers out there, thank you for tuning in to GrowCast today. Jordan River here. We've got an awesome episode with Mary Beth Sanchez, one of my favorite guests to speak to. I know you're going to love it. And it's the last episode of 2019. How incredible this year has been. I can't thank you guys enough for being such dedicated listeners and sharing the show. So cool. Before we jump in with Mary Beth, let's give a little love to today's partner, Cultilux, everybody. Cultilux Grow Lights. Just go to cultilux.com, CULTILUX.com. Promo code GROWCAST10 gets you 10% off of Cultilux lights just for listening to the show. And members of MyGrowPass.com get 25% off their grow lights. And remember, MyGrowPass.com registration ends January 7th, so get it while you can, people. Cultilux is the leading supplier in the industry for ceramic metal halides. Their industry-leading 315-watt, 630-watt, and brand-new 1,000-watt double-ended CMH bulbs are the pinnacle of quality, everybody. With the recent improvements to CMH technology, Cultilux has dedicated all of their efforts into perfecting this technology and helping their customers increase their quality and profits. You've got to check out Cultilux if you're considering CMH. They are the right suppliers for you. So go to cultilux.com, promo code GROWCAST10 for 10% off just for listening. And when you're ready to save 25% on your lights, mygrowpass.com. Get it before January 7th, everybody. All right, everyone, let's get to the Mary Beth Sanchez episode. Thank you all for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please share GrowCast with a friend, a grower, a smoker. Always appreciate it when you guys spread the show. And check out The Homegrown Helpers, Rob Smith's podcast about growing, and my new show, The Coffee Health and Science Podcast, not so new anymore. We're doing good over there. Some fun stuff going on. Come check us out, guys. Today we have a repeat guest. Ooh, a fan favorite, truly. I'm so excited to have back on the line Mary Beth Sanchez. How are you doing today?
Hey, pretty good. Not bad at all.
Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. The fans loved your last episode talking about IPM and organic gardening. It was great.
You flatter me, but I love it. Go ahead and flatter me some more.
Yeah, it was fantastic. We actually did get a lot of follow-up about that episode. People liked your philosophy, and people love what you're doing with Dr. Zymes and Growing Wild. Let's start there. Maybe someone's just tuning in for the first time. Talk about Growing Wild Garden Supply, where you're located, what your values are, and how it's going over there.
Well, we've been in business about, the place started in 2008 and I started there in 2010. And our goal is to be organic and to spread the word of organic and non-toxic practices amongst the growers here, because this is a very popular area for cannabis growing. And we really don't want the cannabis growers to be the problem out in the woods. And we do have, unfortunately, those problem growers who are, do get in trouble for putting pollutants in the waterways and diverting streams and all these uncool things.
Yeah.
And so we really try to promote and to educate. We like to put on talks periodically to how to grow in natural ways, how to grow without pesticide, how to grow without artificial synthetic things that tend to run off and, go in the wrong place. I mean, you didn't spend a fortune on that bottle of fertilizer in order to see 70% of it go into the creek.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's basically what's happening.
Yeah, that's wild. That's really wild. I heard some pretty alarming statistics. By the way, listeners, if you're in Trinity County, check out Growing Wild Garden Supply today, and their website is growingwildgardensupply.com, maybe?
I bet you it is.
Okay, yeah, check it out. I saw an alarming statistic from some recent guests talking about the number of wildlife that has been contaminated with pesticides from grows, and especially these trespass grows on public land, the rodenticide, like all the rat poison.
Absolutely the worst. Because it has such a chain reaction effect, it may kill your rodent, but then the fox eats that rodent and dies, or the hawk eats that rodent as it's dying, and they all die.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's brutal. I mean, especially, it's one thing with the rats, but like the pesticides on the plants, especially when there's so many good options out there, like you have Dr. Zymes and you have these other natural products, essential oil-based products that don't really, that's tough. So I see what you're saying when you're talking about pushing the education, because I think a lot of growers just don't know.
Yeah, and so many people come into it just because they've never grown anything in their life before, and they're very excited that they can now. Let's try this and see how good I am at it, you know. And there's only one way to do it, and that's to try it. If you don't have the education, and the people you're growing with don't have the education, you don't know anybody that's excited about, right, you know, doing things organically, then your tendency is just to go down to the store and see the prettiest bottle, and it's got the greatest picture on it. That's the one I'm bringing home.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Or yeah, my buddy said this or that, you know, have you seen your buddy's crop? Is it really all that?
Yeah, or some guy on the internet. That's where, yes, it gets even more dangerous.
Oh, Lord, I've heard some stuff on the internet that was actually shocking to me. I saw one person was talking about how she had tried, it was some, I think it was like Maxi or something, some not really organic fertilizer, but she said she didn't see any difference, even though she had used like 3 times the recommended rate. And in fact, her plants looked really awful. And I was just, yeah, I was like falling out of my chair. Are you kidding me? I mean, who on earth? If anything, you want to do half the
rate. Yeah, exactly. That's, but people just don't know. That's like, exactly, oh, right.
She must have the most horrible plants on earth, but she had no education, you know, had anybody explain things, exactly, to her. So anyway, that's what Growing Wild, we like to educate people. And nice. So I like working there because I'm working with people who want that. And a lot, the customers really appreciate it.
Right. If smack like dab in the Inner Triangle. I love it.
Yes. And they can bring me their samples and I can look at them and I can say, you know, whether they've got good or bad biology, I can help them in that way. And they're very grateful for that. I don't charge them an extra fee for doing
that. That's awesome. You know,
I have the equipment and I might as well share.
That's really cool. That's really great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I want to get into microbiology. I want to get into cover crops and earthworms and all this fun stuff. But why don't we start with fungus? Why don't we talk about mycorrhiza, talk about the relationship of mycorrhiza, cannabis, and the soil web?
That's one of my favorite subjects. And it's amazing how, you know, they work together. It's like the A-team.
Yeah.
It is, you know, in the case of soil remediation, the power of the cannabis or hemp roots combined with the mycorrhizal fungi and even the non-mycorrhizal fungi, just the saprophytic fungi, or just having that in the soil, what it does for the soil health and keeping it together and keeping it in a sponge-like condition rather than a thing that just runs away when the water comes, you know, off goes the soil with the water or with the wind or what have you. The power of the cannabis root, I mean, for soil remediation, I mean, besides just growing it for the other above ground uses, in the case of soil remediation, which, you know, is a super serious problem, especially where now ocean levels are rising hither and thither, and in other places that might not be it, but the soil is eroding for various reasons. And just one way to get your soil together is to plant it with hemp and fungus and inoculate with the beneficial funguses. I mean, obviously no one's going to want to inoculate with a non-beneficial fungus, but most funguses are. And in fact, the funguses that we call pathogenic, turns out they're not even really funguses at all. They're in fact another entire kingdom that scientists have decided they're going to call oomycetes, which is two O's, M-Y-C-E-T-E-S.
Oomycetes. Oh, wow. And they were imposters. They were fungus imposters.
Those naughty, naughty ones, those ones that rot and kill everything that we really don't want to see, those are all an entirely different kingdom.
Oh, that's great. That's so enlightening. I thought that was interesting what you said about the runoff, though, just holding things together. I understand that's a rather big deal.
Yes. And the way that the microbes, you know, if you do have that healthy soil with the microbes alive and the fungus alive, you maintained those nutrients in the soil. They don't get lost to runoff.
Wow.
Because the nutrients are taken up by the biology, by the bacteria, by the fungi. And then they hold it there when the plant wants it. They have a little signal they put out. And with the plant puts out sugary treats. That's what the fungi and the bacteria want, those sugary treats. And they say, along with my sugary treat, I want you to give me back whatever I want, iron, magnesium, calcium, whatever. And within 3 seconds, this happens. 3 seconds. I'm like, that's faster than Amazon Prime. What I'm saying?
Yeah, that's incredible. You're right.
3 seconds. Yes, the plant puts out the chemical as sugary signal, and assuming that the biology is there, it comes right back with that mineral whenever the plant wants it.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It's an amazing communication system they have in the soil. The more you learn about it, and that's the thing, is that study is so in its infancy. When I was first going to college back in the 90s, the ancient ages, that seems like it now, but they were barely beginning to really get into the study of compost and compost tea and experimenting with what it could do. You know, it's like, these Whoa. Are the things they knew 200 years ago, but they'd all forgotten because, you know, we went to the petrochemicals and stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, the world changed. And so now here we are back, you know, almost 40 years later. It's really come a long way with figuring out what's going on in there and how they react to each other, how they respond to each other.
Right. Right. Do you feel that there's still hope for like the large scale? Like, I feel like I'm kind of living in a bubble, and in my world, it seems like there's so much regenerative, there's so much of a push for this regenerative agriculture,
yes,
but I'm not sure that that's the case for the rest of the country.
Like big ag. I'll tell you what, miraculously, that's changing, and it almost brings tears to my
that's
eyes.
That's great. I was just going to say that makes me so relieved.
Because, oh yes, there's people like Gabe Brown, G-A-B Brown. Look up Gabe Brown and his farm, Brown Family Farms or something. But that's one source of incredible inspiration. And this man speaks farmer to farmer. And he has been convinced, and now he is just a crusader who is so inspiring to listen to. And farmers come to his talk and they go, oh my God, I need some help, because obviously what you're doing is working and what I'm doing is not working.
Right.
Side by side, these farms that are doing the no-till practice, where they're letting cover crops take care of their problem, or they're having mob grazing to lay down fertilizer as the cover crop is being chewed off at the top. These animals are fertilizing as they go. And then when you're planting your commercial crop into that, directly into that without tilling, oh, the soil is wonderful. The products come out fabulous. They don't have to use fertilizer anymore. They Whoa. Have no tilling equipment. They've sold it all. They only have things that inject seeds into the soil. And they plant cover crops constantly. They never, ever let the soil be naked. This is one of those crucial things to the earth and the gardening. Never let your soil be bare. Put
nice.
Something always on.
Well, there are these like ancient principles, this like kind of deeper, older wisdom that we lost as the technology advanced. Like, as weird as that sounds, there was no destruction of the nature. It was just the progression of society, and we just forgot some of these things. Now, I think as we rediscover them and then combine those principles with the technology, I'm really excited to see what that's going to bring.
Well, like, but you think about the olden days, they didn't have the microscopes. They had no idea what the biology in the soil
right.
even was there. You know, they'd call it an evil spirit or something, but what it was a russet mite. You know what I'm saying? Something like that was taken. And
that's exactly right. It's funny you just said that. I just heard an interesting piece of, I guess, lore from the champagne world, like sparkling wine. I guess back in the day, they would ship normal wine, flat wine, and it would re-ferment for some reason and turn fizzy. Huh. And they would say it's the same thing. It was like tainted by an evil spirit or something. So that was there were accounts of people thinking that it was like, you know, cursed wine because it was fizzy, but it had just fermented again and had that life going in it and creating the CO2, which had nowhere to go, but it turns fizzy. So I thought that was,
you know, an there interesting must little... be something evil about that.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I'm just excited to see how all this goes. And I'm glad that there's people like you out there who are, you know, like doing the testing for people and pushing this and making it cool and hip and trendy.
I'm so excited about experimenting these days.
Yeah.
You know, with experimenting with all the different things you can do with the hemp and with the cannabis plants.
Yeah.
Not only that, but the things that you can do, you know, with the compost teas and with the various forms of pesticides and what you can see more and more if you're studying the history of the hemp plant, a lot of times it itself was being used as a pesticide. Its seeds were being crushed to use as repellents, and parts of its body can be pesticidal or repellent. And it's like, hey, this is something in the future. People are going to come up with newer and newer innovations from this plant. Yeah. I can see a day where there will be pesticides derived from this plant for this plant.
Oh, that is so interesting.
It is. And thinking about, you know, all the, especially the safety of the product and the food grade stuff. And you're just, the nutrition of the seed, besides just the marvelous other things you can get from it.
Yeah, no
The
kidding.
Oil from the seed.
Well, linalool is it can be, I mean, I know cannabis terpenes are so expensive, but the point is the plant does produce compounds that we know have pesticide effects.
Yes.
And, so interesting.
There's so many beneficial compounds that we haven't even begun to discover. We've only just gotten permission to begin to play with this plant. So
totally.
Really, they're really in its infancy. And
absolutely.
That is really exciting to me. Where are we going to go with that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Building materials, because you can, the same synthetics that we make from petroleum oil, we can make from hemp oil. And
right.
They have been made. And you can combine these things with the fibers and make synthetic, such as wood. And you can do things that don't rot or things that
hempcrete
will
biodegrade.
I know
that's a big one. Yeah.
It's huge, big deal. Yeah. Is it non-toxic replacement for plastics or building materials? Or just, I just am very excited about the potential of the future right now on this plant. The experiments, I just want to encourage people to experiment. Don't be so myopic that all you do is grow a plant to get high. Because that's it. You know, we've all done that. It's everywhere. Let's do some other exciting things. I'm not saying don't grow a plant and get high, but do a couple other things as
play
well.
Play with it along
the
way.
Side.
No, I love that. I love that.
That's
a great message to the grow world.
Hey, there's all kinds of colors in that crayon box.
Absolutely.
Let's get busy.
Well, you know, actually, that's a pretty good segue. Speaking of all kinds of colors and variety, when it comes to microbial life, this is a question I get a lot, you know.
Yes.
I have these regenerative soil scientists on my show. They say, stimulate your plant's immune system. Stimulate your plant by having a variety of inputs. You know, increase your microbial life, increase the variety of stimulants to your plants. Well, people will write me and say, you know, does that kind of go all the way to the nth degree? Is it the more the merrier with microbes, specifically in a cannabis situation? I know this is kind of a broad question, but I just want your thoughts.
Yes, you're exactly right. And I'm glad you brought it up because to a point, yes, but to another point, not all the way, because there is a problem of invasive species. And, you know, you're better off if you want to get diversity, make it local diversity. You know, if you live in California, you don't need microbes from New Zealand. They can potentially be something that we have no control for here that could get out of hand.
That's a very similar answer than what I've received before. And that makes perfect sense to me. But I guess I'm wondering, when it comes to all these different great products out there now, you know, you got your Photosynthesis Plus and your Mammoth P, and people are making their ones at home. Is it like, should we just find the few that we like, or should we just?
No. You should investigate what works in your area. Now, most of those things, like the Mammoth P and such, it turns out those are microbes that are already in the various places. So importing them wouldn't make any difference. They're already there. So you weren't bringing in something that they don't already have in their area. But, you know, like, but to bring in something that's entirely new and untested and unregulated and, you know, just, oh, my friend gave me this stuff and it was awesome. It worked in his thing, you know, but it's not necessarily in a bottle or labeled for use in California or wherever you are, you know, what have you.
Interesting.
So you don't want to necessarily go wild and crazy with unknown biology. You want to, like, for instance, here's something that I found out recently that was actually quite scary. Due to the climate change, a lot of soils that were permafrosted are now not so permanently frosting. They're melting. And what's coming out are funguses that have been dormant for maybe thousands, millions of years.
Holy cow.
Well, these funguses are not beneficial. They're causing, when the spores get on.
Killer
humans,
spores?
They're not good. Yeah, they're doing terrible things to the people's skin.
Holy cow.
And, like,
that sounds like a horror movie.
It kind of is. And this is happening like up in those northern places where the permafrost is melting, and they're finding like, there's some stuff.
Whoa, that's so freaky.
Yet on the other hand, there's like Alaska humus, that stuff they get from the melting, you know, below where the glaciers are receding. They get that fabulous, I think Ancient Forest is the brand
right.
on the bag I get. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous soil. I would recommend that to anybody as an additive to your soil mix.
But
yeah, it's kind of tried and tested, and you know, it's not going to do weird stuff to you, but just any old soil that you find in the forest might not necessarily be safe to take home to your garden.
Wow. That is an interesting take.
Kind of scary, but true.
Okay, before we jump back in with Mary Beth Sanchez, let's give a little love to Gorilla Grow Tents, everybody. That's right. Just go to GorillaGrowTent.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you free shipping on your grow tents. And members to MyGrowPass.com get their grow tents 10% off and free shipping. That's right. Make sure you get a grow pass before January 7th, everybody. Frustrated with cheap, flimsy grow tents that didn't stand the test of time, a group of California growers, designers, and engineers collaborated in San Francisco in 2011 to revolutionize the future of indoor gardening, and thus the Gorilla Grow Tent was born. The Gorilla Grow Tent is, it's thick, it's durable, it's strong, it's smart, it's tall, it's odor-proof, it's stealthy, it's insulated, and it truly transcends the term grow tent, everyone. It's got great, thick, durable canvas, steel interlocking poles, easy view windows, and it has height extension kits that you can get your grow tent to nearly 10 feet tall. This is one of the best grow tents on the market, people. You've seen people using them and killing it, so why not try out GorillaGrowTent.com today, everyone? Promo code GROWCAST for free shipping, and members to MyGrowPass.com get 10% off and free shipping. Get that membership before January 7th, people. All right, let's get back to the show, everyone.
What do you have to say about maximizing the biology that you do have, whatever your medium is, just trying to increase that biology, really make it thrive, you know?
Well, you know what I've discovered from studying like Elaine Ingham and such for, you know, getting biology in every situation? You can even, in hydroponics, grow, you know, with compost tea and such, but you just have to be willing to clean out your equipment more
right.
often and
yeah.
more thoroughly. But you can still get that biology. You can still put liquid mycorrhizae into your watering system for hydroponics. You can still have compost tea in your reservoirs for your hydroponic systems, and you can still get those benefits in that way through hydroponics, plus the foliar applications are, you know, in any garden, you can do that. So adding compost tea to any substrate or foliar situation that you can, you know, assuming that you have a good quality compost tea, and mulching with that, if you have that kind of a situation, I think people growing with the clay balls or things or a really, really super strictly hydroponic system with rock wool or something, you might not want to throw the soil on it, but, you know, the other thing that is really essential is that you can get mycorrhizal fungus in liquid form that will work even in a hydroponic system. And I think that's mostly not designed for the one that's just kind of a nutrient film where the roots are just sort of hanging there and the water is sort of flowing by them, but more for kind of a flood and drain in a pot sort of a situation.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I'm
not
right.
sure if I'm making sense. Sometimes.
No, I'm right there with you. You've described that perfectly.
Yeah,
and I know there are some
people.
Go ahead.
Will do that. And well, a lot of people will do like a flood and drain. And so then you can have more of a normal kind of a soil thing and just getting it wet and the nutrients in the soil that way. But
yeah, as opposed to like a deep water culture or just even like you said, kind of like the recirculating hydroponic system.
Right.
But
so if you've got the organic minerals combined with the mycorrhizal fungi and you're hopefully using these humic acids from lake bed and not from coal tar. If you know what I'm saying, leonardite and humulite, I do not trust them at all. I know that the leonardite is no good for at least 6 months in the soil, and probably the same for the humulite, although they're not going to tell you that on their website.
Oh, man. Okay. So elaborate on that for a second. That's two different. Are those two things labeled the same things?
frequently?
Well, they're both labeled as humic acids.
Right. Okay. I think you brought this up on the last show. Not all humic acids are created equally. I think that may have been you. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, I absolutely remember doing that. But I've since learned about the humulite, which tries to purport itself as being better than the leonardite. But it's basically kind of the same thing. It comes from their tar sands oil.
Oh, really?
Which to me is not that much more fabulous than coal tar oil.
Interesting.
So, you know, it's right. kind of the same thing at a different state. And, you know, coming out of Alberta, it's coal tar is all tar sands is their whole industry up there.
Whoa. So how can we tell if we're getting the good stuff?
You want to look for something that says it's sourced from a lake bed. That's one way. If you're going to be buying it off a shelf, you can actually make your own if you make compost tea, you can leach your humic acids right out of your compost.
Whoa. What does that look like? What does that process entail?
It's just really super simple. What you have to do is suppose you had a pile of compost and you wanted to get some humic acids out of it. Set it on some sort of a screen, like a window screen mesh where all the soil isn't going to flow through, and pour water over it gently and slowly and let that water percolate through. And that water that comes out is all brown and lovely.
No
that's
way.
Humic acids. That's it. Free today.
That's crazy.
You've already got it in your garden. You just got extracted this way and then use it as your heart desires. Well, you know, I think we mentioned last time about how it will chelate the chlorine.
Chlorine, right. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it also chelates the other minerals. And so it makes it so if you have a totally toxic soil, we were talking about soil remediation before. If your soil is totally toxic, this will chelate the minerals so that if there are toxic minerals in the soil, they won't be taken up by the plant unless the plant decides that it wants that for some reason.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Such as like arsenic. You know, we do need trace amounts of arsenic, but we don't need very much at all. So you got to have it, but you don't want to be just drinking arsenic, pour arsenic on the soil. You want it to be in a chelated form where the plant makes up its mind when it wants it. And here's another thing. When you're growing synthetically, you're making that plant 100% dependent on you. You are God.
Right.
You have to control the climate. You have to control the temperature. You have to control the pH. You have to control the parts per million. You have to be on it and dial it in. And like when you're growing organically, you can pretty much just lay back and enjoy the day and watch your plant
Let the microbes
grow.
Do the work. Yeah.
Let the microbes do the work. They don't ask for much. I don't have to pay Social Security. I just have to give them some humic acids, put in the water periodically, and make sure that they all
That's
have
so crazy.
Whatever they want to be happy.
Humic acid you made yourself.
That's awesome.
You can. You actually can. And it's perfectly fine. Elaine Ingram herself explained this method. And it's merely that, you know, you don't want to force the water through. You want it to percolate on its own just through your lovely compost, and you should have, if you don't have lovely brown water coming out of the bottom, then your compost is probably not ready. It's not broke down enough.
So interesting though.
But yeah.
Here's
Otherwise,
a question.
You know, you can go buy it, but it's expensive.
Yeah, that's true. I've never heard that before. I'm really glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, now you know the secret.
Taking a left turn, okay. I just want to get your opinion. What do you think of aquaponic setups?
I just love them.
Great. Me too. I think they're so interesting.
I think it's, you know, it's really the natural way. I mean, it's kind of an obvious system because it's got all the biology there, including the living animals, you know, and it's fairly portable. And if, you know, people are doing it correctly, it works so, so well.
Nice.
You know, I just think, and it's so sustainable if you, like I say, do the right practices and control your situation so you don't, you know, it's really a thing where you, again, have to really pay attention, make sure that the fish are doing well and the health of the water. But it's the quality of the produce is, you know, just as good as anything you could grow anywhere. And you know, if you think about the population of the earth and all, and sometimes you need those systems where you can grow them in a vertical way.
Yeah, self-contained, exactly, like very indoors highly engineered indoors.
Yes.
If you can just figure out the energy side, like if you could somehow get it on solar or something like that, then it's like
solar and wind.
It could solve a lot of the world's problems, I feel.
Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff.
Crazy. Yeah. So interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to try some of that fish too. I want some of that cannabis fish. That fish is probably strong as fuck from all the cannabis protein and stuff, like nibbling on the roots or whatever.
Yeah, well, here's another thing that I was thinking about, you know, as far as the innovation and things goes. I bet there's all kinds of things going on in the roots that are beneficial that we haven't even begun to investigate yet. Like, what are the medicinal properties of the roots? Or
that's
what,
such a good
what happens if you do this or that with the roots? And like, okay, that's another field of study to go play with.
Oh my God, yeah. You're dead on. You're so right. Okay, let's move on. There's something else on the list here that I needed to cover with you. There you go. There's the pun right there. Cover crops and mulching tips. I saw this on your little bio sheet. Talk to me about that.
Yes. Well, you know, all cover crops are not alike. And that's the thing. You know, all cover crops aren't a one-size-fit-all thing. And for a lot of people, you know, suppose you're growing corn out in the fields, you're not going to have the same kind of cover crop as somebody that's growing cannabis in a pot or somebody that's got an indoor garden, if you know what I'm saying. So you're in some of those big outdoor field things. I mean, they'll have sunflower plants. They'll have Sudan grass. They'll have things that grow giant. And you know, you can't do a plant like that if you're growing in an indoor garden. Or
exactly.
Something. You just want to go with your little glow growing clovers and vetches and that sort of thing. And make sure that you don't ever take those roots out of the soil. You only cut down the top of the plant when you want to plant your principal crop, and you plant it right in without digging or tossing or mulching or turning the soil in any way. And your nutrients should already be there. If you have those lovely clovers and such, and they are fixing the nitrogen as they should be, and the other biology will be in there, and your fungus will already be in there. They'll be, you know, assuming that there are minerals in there. And that's the other component. If you have one of those soils that doesn't contain minerals already, you know, throw in your azomite or something to this effect that has all the collection of minerals in it. I choose azomite just because it's, you know, A to Z of minerals
full
and
profile.
Essential elements.
Sure. Right. But it's the same goes for if you have a super soil mix or you bought Sohum soils.
And you're assuming that that is in there, that those nutrients are in there and your fungus is going to get to them and everybody's going to live happily ever.
I love that. And I, like you said before, I like the no naked soil thing.
Yes.
Do you suggest, even if someone's not going to get into cover crops, should they have some hay? See this more and more.
Mulch.
Ah, okay.
Even if you've got nothing planned to be grown anywhere, put down some bark, put down something, because you've got to get those nutrients in the soil. You've got to get the fungal network going in the soil. And the more particularly carboniferous things, such as the wood chips and the straw and such, will encourage that fungal growth and happy things. And earthworms, I did want to bring up, because earthworms are not all alike, and I just recently learned about the jumping worms.
Oh my gosh!
And kind
Tell
of
me.
Freaking me out. And have you heard of them?
Jumping worms? No, enlighten us.
Oh, okay. This is scary because I guess they were originally found in Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
But they're an invasive species from Eastern Asia. And now they're not only in the Midwest, but they're all over the East Coast. They're thick along the East Coast. And now they've been found in Oregon, and guess they're spreading, you know, pretty soon the rest of the states, God knows. They are the most incredibly voracious over. Don't ever get this worm and put it in your compost. In fact, if it's commercially available, never, ever get this worm. It is the worst. It eats up the duff so quickly that the soils become barren. They can become barren, like as if they were a herd of goats, and the soils become compacted. Even though they're leaving their castings, which are nutrient rich, there's nothing to hold them because they churn the soil like tiny little, they're like a bunch of little rototillers under the soil. They churn the soil so horribly that your plants that are planted into the soil and being held together by the roots and the fungus, they're suddenly lying there limp, and you go pick them up and they're not even connected to the soil. They've just been dug up from underneath as if it was a gopher.
That's crazy.
These are the craziest worms ever.
Well, and how do you differentiate them? I was just going to say, how do you differentiate them?
They have a white band around, I want to call it their neck. Okay. Just
right.
For lack of, you know, where is the neck?
Yeah.
It's where that white band is.
I know the cartoon worm and his little head pops up.
They
okay.
Have a, Yeah, they have a more gray.
They have a collar
looking body with a white collar, and otherwise the other worms are more red looking, and they don't have a white collar. They have just kind of a bit that's swollen up on their
right
where they're called it their neck. But these jumping worms, they move super quickly. They move like snakes. They are weird to watch. They are scary because they swarm like a herd. They literally are freaky when people see them and they've never seen them before, because you'll like uncover some leaves and go, holy moly, there's a million little tiny snakes in there going out like crazy. And if you touch them, they literally seem to be jumping.
That's crazy. So this is not something we want in our garden.
They are horrible in the soil. They're causing huge forest destruction there, because when the glaciers came ever so many thousands of years ago, they eliminated all the worms in Northern America. So these worms came after these forests, the maple forests, the beech forests, everything that are up there and like in Canada and all that. All these forests evolved without any earthworms. And so the plants that evolved there they need their soil layers the way they are. They don't need their soil layers mixed. They don't survive if their soil layers get mixed. Their root systems can't adapt.
Wow.
Now suddenly this thing comes on and it's doing literal rototilling and the roots of this plant, and it's chewing off live things. It's chewing off dead things. They talked about a woman who went to pick a little seedling out of her soil, and literally one of these worms grabbed it and pulled it back in. And I said, what? I kid you not. They're crazy.
It's like Tremors. It's like the movie Tremors.
They call them crazy worms, and they call them jumping worms because they don't act like normal worms.
Crazy worms. That's messed up.
Yeah. They have a scientific name, but nobody will remember that.
Okay, we've got to keep up to date on this.
I'm serious. Look for those worms.
Hashtag
no
crazy
worms. If you see
a white
collar on the worm, that worm's got to go.
Oh my gosh!
In the northern forests, like say north of Tennessee, say, and west of the North Pacific, is an area that where they really don't need any worms in their soil. So that's a place where if you're into composting and you're into growing with worms and earthworms, and you got the good right worms, you really don't want to let them out into the native soil. You really don't want to let them loose in the forest. You don't want to go down fishing and then throw your leftovers in the stream, because these forests have adapted to not have earthworms of any kind, and they are actually detrimental. But these jumping ones are just off the chart.
Jeez.
They're worms on crack.
Keep an eye out for the crack worms, everybody.
You see that white collar? Ooh.
Get them out of there.
You really literally should call this a state agency of agriculture that deals with such things, because they want to know where they are.
That's crazy.
And how fast they're spreading. Yeah, they're really, really.
That's messed up.
That's why I say all earthworms are not alike.
I'm also seeing not all nematodes are alike.
Yeah. And you know, nematodes, aren't always a problem, but if you do have the problem nematodes, which would be the root feeders, you really, really, really got to have your predator nematodes to save the day, because the predators will eat all of the others. There are the bacterial feeders, the main groups. I mean, there's so many species, but the main groups are the bacterial feeders, the fungal feeders, the root feeders, and the predators. The predators will eat all of the other guys. And if you've got a problem with root feeding nematodes, you'll know when you pick up your roots and see the damage that they've done. It's visible.
Wow.
But if you inoculate your soil with the predator nematodes, which you can buy commercially, and they're thankfully, there's a couple species that usually come in the package. They're basically microscopic, but they're good to use both above and below the soil, because in the soil, they'll kill all kinds of things. You know, I was thinking, oh, that'd be the thing to try on the jumping worms, because they can kill grubs. But guess what? Turns out that these predator nematodes don't attack earthworms at all.
Weird.
So they're safe for your earthworms, but they are not safe for the other predator. They're not safe for the other nematodes, and they aren't safe for like grubs that are in your soil or those other little soil pests such as your root aphids and that sort of thing. If you've got these predator nematodes in your good organic soil, then you can really ward off a huge amount of problems.
Oh man.
Soil-borne issues.
If you can avoid a root aphid infestation, that's a lifesaver right there.
Yes, and the fungus gnat larvae. Ugh. Yes, terrible.
Nice.
Stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. What you said that this is available commercially. Is this like, do you have any brands you stand behind or any specific like recommendations?
Well,
or?
I know that the stores that we bought them for, I think Planet Natural, I think is one. Nature's Control is another. I'm sure they both have them, but you know, nice. Somebody that you know that's reputable for beneficial insects would probably have them. They're fairly common, but a lot of people, you know, like I say, they're not educated about growing. I can't assume they know all these things. They really should know about this one because this is one of those super, super good, easy things to apply.
Oh, for
they
sure.
They come like 2 million to a little 2-inch sponge. It's got 2 million on it. And that one little 2-inch sponge can cover 3,000 square feet.
Wow.
So it's a lot.
Yeah. I just don't think it's that big in the like, kind of mainstream grow world, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And but you know, the more people hear about it, the more they're going to try.
Absolutely.
And that's another thing that I love about this growing industry is that the peripheral industries that get to grow and get to experiment,
yes,
and get to benefit. And it's like, gosh, there's just so much of a ripple effect of beneficial things we can do with this plant. Yeah.
That's one of the most exciting parts to me too, is all the side industries that crop up and all the different innovations that help other industries and are helping farming and
just
helping medicine,
especially,
and making money.
Yeah. Nowadays when, what do we need but an economy that works? Hemp and cannabis and their peripherals and, you know, the ripple effects just
support
it.
So
yeah.
Could support
much
a nation.
To offer.
Yeah, totally.
It's literally. I mean, because you can eat it, you can be clothed with it. It's your medicine. It's your fuel. It's like so much potential. And I'm sure there's more, but we just haven't, we barely tapped to scratch the surface.
Totally. And here in America, we love our cannabis. So if we're allowed to do what we want to do, I mean, we are a cannabis nation. So I think that this could be the start of something beautiful. Do you think we're going legal?
I love it. I think it's wonderful. Yes, because now you see more and more and more people coming out of the closet. I mean, when you've got Mitch McConnell having a hemp farm, hello.
And I didn't see that.
He and some other, you know,
it's got to be going
Republican guys who would, you know, fought you tooth and nail for the love of God. And yes, now they're down there saying, well, hemp, you know, that's the way.
I'm excited to see,
because the CBD train, you know?
We really have a bill that's like being presented. So
it actually has a chance.
Oh.
And I think it's just a matter of time. So many states are going with it. It's like they are absolute idiots to waste their time on this.
The cat's out of the bag at this point.
It's so far out of the bag. I mean, you look at you go on Instagram and it's all but legally, regularly available. You know, it's just everybody's favorite thing is that, look at what I got. Look at what I'm showing.
Yep.
Look at my pretty picture.
Yep, we broke it. We broke
so
the system.
Many pretty pictures.
So many pretty pictures.
Yeah. Totally. Oh, they keep trying to, you know, oh, look, we pulled this down because it violated community standards. I'm like, yeah, right. And then you give them a little argument and go, nope, it's right back up again because it actually didn't violate any standards.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, since we're on that subject, do you want to give out your Instagram? Are you looking for followers from?
Yeah, we always love that.
Ah, sure.
I am simply MBSIPM for Mary Beth Sanchez, Integrated Pest Management.
That's great. MBSIPM.
If you'd like to answer your questions, you can always direct mail or direct message questions or add to a post questions. I like to respond. You know, sometimes I'm busy with other things, but I will get back to it and see if we can't fix or at least answer whatever little question you might have, or I might be able to refer you to someone else who can. So
wonderful.
I wanted to ask you, Cafe Mom, MAM, have you heard of it?
No, what's that?
Okay, well, then I'm gonna send you a text on your coffee show because I'm into your coffee show too.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much for saying that.
I'll talk to you about Cafe Mom, MAM.
Oh my gosh. Yes, please. I look forward to that. I would do way more coffee talk on this show, but I'm scared that growers are going to grow tired of it. He keeps
there
talking about coffee.
Well, you know what? I like coffee too. So here we go. Just keep up the good work.
It's a match made in heaven. Thank you, Mary Beth. That's really
all
funny.
Right, Jordan.
Awesome.
Take care.
All right. Take care, Mary Beth. We'll let you go. Have a great day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. I forgot that's kind of how she does it. I like that. I like that sign off at the end of the show. Awesome. Another great episode. Mary Beth is just such a wonderful guest. We love having her. I'm sure I'll have her again. That's all, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Be safe out there and grow smarter.
That's our show today, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Special thanks to Mary Beth Sanchez. Make sure to check out our merch at growcastpodcast.com. Click merch. Let's see. Shout out to Start to Finish. Start the number 2, Finish 710 on Instagram for all your consulting needs, everyone. If you got questions, hit up Start to Finish. Shout out to Jay Blanked on this beat for doing the ad beat. SoundCloud.com/JayBlanked. And that's it, everyone. Make sure to get that membership. We're closing January 7th. Other than that, I got nothing else to update you guys on. Stay tuned for more Growcast coming at you. Thank you all for tuning in. Best of luck in your gardens, everybody. Bye-bye.